Sabeel with Radio Tacoma. This conversation is about ghost lights and magic theater. When a theater is closed, we say that it is dark, but it is never completely dark. For safety, there always remains one light on the stage called the ghost light. Theaters across the globe are now dark as actors and agents and technicians and assistant prop masters and dancers and choreographers and on are huddled at home. But in the empty theaters, a ghost light stands alone on the dark stage. The following is a conversation with Helen Machen-Smith and Daniel Mays, two actors who fulfilled a lifelong dream to build a professional Shakespeare theater, a free professional theater. I met Helen in the 1970s and Dan in the 1980s. It was a joy to talk with them over the internet, and a joy to hear Helen and Dan talk about Island Stage Left and about magic.
You know, I remember the story that you first told about being on stage, and one of your first appearances on stage, things happened just before on stage and you couldn't hold it, and so you had to go to the loo.
Oh, right. That was the church concert. Yes. Must have been about seven. And I was playing both Peter Pan and Wendy in the same scene, talking to each other, jumping back and forth.
That's true talent.
I've been playing multiple parts ever since. Now, I think I knew that, well, I know, I remember thinking that I wanted to be on stage from before Anna was born. But I started out thinking I was going to be a dancer, but that came to a sudden end. And I was thinking the other day, you know, I remember the first Christmas show I was in at school, and it was a Christmas festival, you know, and there were three angels. And all the big parts were taken by the big girls, but the little girls got to be angels. Well, there were three of us, and one chair was taller than the other two. And Margaret Venner got the middle chair because she had longer hair. And I remember being so jealous, I wanted to knock her off her stool.
So your first encounter with injustice, yeah. And it's stayed with you ever since.
No, it's my first encounter with jealousy. So, you know, then, I was mucking about as a 60s hippie in London once I was let loose from my parents. And I was going to drama school and hanging out with people I now see on Downton Abbey. And
yes. Game of Thrones.
And yes. Yes. I actually met Judy Dench during those years quickly because my roommate's boyfriend was going out with her as well, even though she was quite a bit older. So, yes, so I loved drama school. I loved all the classes. I remember as one of the teachers saying, in my third year, you're really quite an actress, aren't you? And I remember thinking, ooh, Pauline Stewart said I'm an actress. My first audition was in London for a theatre company in Wales. An old man who was the artistic director, asked if he could interview me in my flat, and I didn't think twice about it.
Ooh.
Yes, and it was another Mark Allen. Remember Mark Allen?
No.
He ran a Portland, what was it called? Portland Civic Theatre.
Oh, it was something Players, wasn't it?
It was later on, I think, or maybe earlier.
He did kind of dinner theatery,
yes,
type stuff.
And that was my first actual audition in the States. And the same thing happened. He was auditioning me at the Mark Antony Hotel for something like Hot Girls, but it wasn't Hot Girls. What was it? Dee wanted to go and audition, and I didn't have any intention of auditioning. And she said, would you come with me? And I said, okay. And I got called back, and he wanted to meet me. The Benson, that's what it was, the Portland. Benson, yeah. In Portland. And I got there, and he asked me if I would go upstairs and show him my legs. And I said, no, I don't think I will, thank you. And I'm not interested in the part either. And I went home and I remember him calling.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh. Wow.
So those were my two little casting couch incidents. Mm-hmm. But you remember, I mean, as soon as I landed on American soil, just about, I was doing a play, bringing in chairs from the YWCA and climbing a gym charade.
Hay fever, if I recall.
Hay fever, right. Hay fever. And then we did, I think we did Blythe Spirit after that. And then we went, then I got a space at the Wilson Center, which later turned into an actual theater space. Mm. But I was the first one to say, can I use this space as a theater?
Oh, nice.
And we did a production of Blythe Spirit, which I'm sure you vaguely remember.
You played Madame Arcati, well, didn't you?
She didn't in the end, but she rehearsed Madame Arcati.
Crazy.
Yes.
Went and we had screaming out of Portland.
And then I got, then we did Dark at the Moon, mm-hmm. very badly, I think. And then I auditioned for Portland State with Dee, again, with mm-hmm. Dee. And they asked me to direct the summer shows at Cannon Beach.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yeah. Then, let's see, what happened next? Jim Robinson happened next. That was Eugene, and that's where I met Dan in a play.
Ah, yeah.
In The Ladies Not for Burning.
And later, Hay Fever and Dark of the Moon.
Yes. Better versions. Better
I say, it's perfectly ripping out who let me come down.
I can't remember who played Sandy for us.
Sandy Tyrrell?
Yes.
Me.
No, I mean in the original.
Oh, in one you did.
Yeah.
In Portland.
Yes, I can remember.
Some big guy was a friend of
Jim Sherrod.
Wasn't it one of his friends?
Oh, maybe. I'm a complete blank.
Yeah.
However, I tell you one thing that happened during that period, and I can't remember whether it was Blythe Spirit or Hay Fever, but I took everybody on a sort of weekend away up by into the gorge.
Eagle Creek, right?
Yes, Eagle Creek. Oh.
But I remember being intensely, intensely disappointed that I couldn't go.
Yes. Well, it was my first, what we now call magic rehearsal, because it was my attempt to take people away from their everyday lives and have them concentrate on the play. It wasn't a terribly successful one, actually, but it became something that I did with every play I ever directed, I think. Yes, just about every play. And largely it happened to start with because I was working with non-professionals and they all needed to really focus and get rid of all their distractions. But it's become a standard way for me to direct Shakespeare, and I do it every year for Stage Left. It's always interesting and always things are discovered, and it's something that actors never forget. For the Shakespeare's, which is when I do it, I set aside a day called Magic Day, and nobody knows what's going to happen. And we do the show with no dialogue at all. And that gets everybody really quiet at the beginning of the day. And it also makes them start to realize what they're doing physically mm-hmm. to tell the story.
And it's on our outdoor stage.
Oh, yes.
So it's warm and... You know, you're moving around and not saying anything. It must, you know, to anybody who just showed up to deliver a package or something, they probably think we were all insane.
Let's go back a little bit because you skipped Ashland.
Oh, right. Yes. Oh, yes. Well, there was that. Well, there were various things in Eugene. There were all sorts of things in Eugene.
What I remember from Ashland is I never went there, but your company came to Pullman. While I was
That's right. We did a Comedy of Errors.
Yeah.
Yes.
In that cavernous basketball stadium.
Yeah.
And one of our company, I believe it was in Pullman, one of our, what was his name? He got fired for it. He arrived drunk performance.
His name, last name was Christensen. He's kind of a big guy.
No, it wasn't Ken. Yeah.
He wasn't one of the professional. I mean, he was kind of a towny guy who was in the production.
Yes. Well, for Dan, it was an absolute dream. For me, it was the cross between a dream and a nightmare because I just had Alex. And I was trying to juggle motherhood with a full-time theater commitment.
Yeah. That's kind of what happened with that is that we were, you know, we did a lot of plays in Eugene and circumstances arose and I wound up getting hired in Ashland and I had to go down, I had to leave and go right away. Mm-hmm. And Helen was still directing a play in Eugene. So she still had the cats and the car.
And Alex,
yeah. And so all I had was a backpack filled with marijuana and went down and I stayed in this hotel that was owned by the girlfriend of a guy I knew really well. So I had a room to stay. And that's where I first met James Avery, who played the dad on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. But he was one of only two black people, probably the entire Rogue Valley. He and John Huston were both in the festival. And he was a great, big, huge guy. And he was going to play Othello, but he was doing some other things. So when he found out I had that bag of dope, we just became very fast friends and remained friends for many years until he passed away, actually.
He had diabetes.
Really bad. Yeah. So I had already gone down there. So Helen had to do her thing, and then she had to bring everything.
I had
down.
To move house and bring two cats, both of whom I got tranquilizers for because I also had, you know, a small child screaming in the back seat, as I anticipated. And one of them took to the, you know, just fell asleep like he was supposed to. And the other one had an adverse reaction to it and went absolutely ballistic. And so I was driving down to Ashland with a screaming child and this cat jumping back and forth between the back seat and the steering wheel.
Oh, no.
Wish I could have been there. So that's kind
of... But it was a wonderful, you know, it was a wonderful theater experience, especially in those days where it wasn't as... I don't know, clinical as it is now. It was a real company, and we keep in touch with lots of people from that place and that era. And it was wonderful in its way, but oh my goodness, my diary was just full of notes about babysitters because you couldn't ever not show up. And so if your child was sick, you were just stuck. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Alex got pneumonia and was in the hospital. And they let me out of curtain call.
Oh, yeah.
That was all they'd let me out of. So so it was a very difficult time for me, too. I mean, I felt guilty because I was torn between being a mother and being a theater person.
Well, yeah, but there's nothing to feel guilty about that. It's the way of the world.
Yep. Well, anyway.
Now, one thing that I really remember that about you and your acting, both of you, was when I lived at Brown's Point and we were doing murder mysteries.
Oh, right.
And every time my friend Heidi would break up with somebody, we'd have a murder mystery.
I remember playing David O. Sleesnik.
You were, yes. And the thing is that, you know, because I knew you guys were going to be great. Because I think, Helen, you were Ava Gina.
Yes. I remember slipping into some slinky thing.
What's but anyway, that? So, you know, you drive up to this place and I see you get out of the car and I go, oh, hey, that's Helen. And who's that guy with her? I did not recognize you, Dan.
Yeah, I think I've that's sort of been the story of my career is to morph into other things.
From the moment you get out of the car and you come in and everything, you did not break character. It took me a long time to really figure out. And the only reason I really knew is because you were with Helen.
Yeah.
I remember your newly dead game.
Oh yeah. That was pretty fun.
One of your jokes that I really liked and I've told it to people before is because it always gets just a groan from people. So, you know, during the Apollo moonshot, why was it that NASA chose Coca-Cola over as their official drink? And they say, why? I said, because they couldn't get 7-Up. Because they all blew up.
Yeah,
that's the reaction I would get.
Yeah,
that was your joke, Louisa.
Yeah.
I didn't finish telling the magic thing.
Oh, yeah,
the magic rehearsal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so after we have done a silent rehearsal, then we do an Italian rehearsal, which is double speed. And then we do, you know, other theater games like tugs of war between the Capulets and the thingamabobs or
Montagues
or, you know, whatever's appropriate to the play. And then we have something to eat all together. Nobody's allowed to leave the property during this day. And then I blindfold everybody and I take them with the help of a couple of volunteers. We lead them to the cars and we drive them to some spot on the island that I have selected as appropriate for this particular play. And often we do the first scene with everybody still in masks. So all they're doing is listening to each other. And then bit by bit, I'll take their masks off and lead them somewhere. And then the only rule to the, it's not a rehearsal and it's not a performance, it's a magic rehearsal, I guess. The only rule is you can't use any of your original blocking.
No.
And so people find their own place to do their scenes, and they may be doing it simultaneously while somebody else is doing another scene. And the rest of us are not an audience as such, but we watch from a distance.
Voyeurs.
Yes, we're voyeurs. Yes, we really are. Yes. And some amazing stuff happens. You know, all sorts of things open up. People discover sides to their character they had never seen before.
And it takes some of the actors a while to get used to the idea of the whole thing. You know, you have to allow yourself just to go for it. So, you know, there's a lot of television movie acting stuff that starts to, because you don't have to project. You know, you can do a scene that
you can whisper a scene.
You can walk with somebody and just let everybody follow you and talk to them like, you know, barely being heard.
Right.
So, it's great because you just discover, and the thing is you can take some more time to do everything. And so almost everybody over the years has come away saying that was one of the most extraordinary experiences they'd ever had in the theater. You know, some of them don't get it at all. Not many.
We've only ever had one who totally didn't get it, and she was a local.
You can kind of predict probably who's not going to understand it. Who's not theatrical enough to do the magic rehearsal. This is really kind of what it comes down to.
But I think all of them get, you know, if one person does it, they all get it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's often what my role was to kind of lead them into this no man's land and make them feel good about it, you know, somehow.
Make them realize it didn't matter.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what they did. They could do whatever they liked.
Yeah. And so it's a great opportunity to come off the stage and get into your character in a whole different kind of way. You know, you don't need the big movement. You don't need the big voice. You can do all kinds of other stuff.
And you discover all, I hate to say it because I'm not a big believer in it, but you discover all the subtext.
I thought you were going to say motivation.
Well, the whole way of American actors is very different than the way I was trained. You know, I think, of course, the way I was trained is probably old-fashioned in England now, but you know, it was in the same era when I came over here, and everybody has a school that they've learned, you know, the Meisner school or the Stanislavski school. Or I just like that Ricky Gervais interview with
Ian McKellen
when he's asking him, you know, how do you act?
How do you find Gandalf?
Yes.
You know?
and he just says, well, I actually, you know what? I would just suggest that people imagine, because I just imagine being Gandalf.
I just pretend.
I just pretend. Yeah. And to me, that's, you know, what acting is. I mean, it's a lot more than that. Of course, there's technique and all that stuff. But, you know, the bottom line is that's my route in, is you imagine, you pretend. And it's amazing how few of the new young actors go that route. You know, they have to intellectualize it and divide it up. And
I didn't train at all. No. So everything I...
But Dan's been a natural since he was born.
Well, you know, I've learned a lot of stuff from Helen. We've worked together so many times. And I have kind of adopted the English way. I suppose, however, with a little bit of American on my spin, you know, but just the way they work and, you know, their ability to kind of do everything and do it on a dime without having to think about it, without having to motivate it, without having to activate it, whatever all these words there are. You know,
yes, and there are like, certain words you can't use now and certain, you know, it's the whole PC thing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous to me. I mean,
it's exhausting.
I have never hesitated to say to Helen, if there's something I'm not understanding, I just say to Helen, just give me the line reading.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're never supposed to do that. No. You're never ever supposed to say that.
And yet, the best actors I've worked with have all been like Dan. They've all just said, if you want to give me a line reading, that's fine with me.
Yeah, just give me the line reading. Because I don't want to spend the next 2 days. I don't want the psychology of, you know, saying, well, you go home and think about this, Dan. And, you know, just give me the line reading.
Yeah. Oh, that's right what now. You mean.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. So, a lot of the new actors and young actors we've worked with have been. You know, it's like they have this thing about entitlement or something, you know, you can't do certain things. And they just don't, you know, when Meryl Streep was doing Mother Courage in New York, and they were doing it outside the Public Theater, and it poured with rain, and the stage was soaking wet. She was the first person out there with a broom pushing the water off the stage. And now we get... Some of these young actors today, they just wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm. It's not my job.
Yeah, not my job.
No. Mostly, though, I would say mostly we've had a really good bunch. And then the other thing that totally finishes them off is when we go on tour to the other islands.
Oh, yes.
with nothing, basically, with a costume.
Yes, well,
and maybe one prop.
So we're kind of getting ahead here because now you're talking about – island stage left, right?
Right.
Left, right, whatever.
Oh, yes. Somebody said to us at the beginning, you know, if you'd called yourselves island stage right, you'd probably have a lot more money by now.
And I think I came up with stage left.
Just because you did.
It sounded better than stage right. And I tend to like playing stage left better than playing stage right. I don't know why. It just feels like a natural place for me to go.
Well, we had all sorts of imaginative names for the company, but when it came right down to it, they just all sounded a bit silly.
Yorick's Place was, I think, one that came up at one point. There were a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, we had sheets of paper.
Oh, yeah.
When we were in Seattle before we got up here, we started writing names for the theater, and you know there were dozens and dozens of them, but make
so
up my
number you talking about was the center of the wooden O.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well,
you had
somebody
to explain
else,
that to me.
Yes, well, somebody actually nabbed that one before we could get it.
Yeah.
Yes, so there is a wooden O theater, Shakespeare company in Seattle,
and they're not very good.
So how did Island Stage Left come about? And
well,
it's totally different. I don't know that there's anything like it, is there?
There are outdoor Shakespeare companies as kind of rural as ours. I don't know, maybe probably not even in Canada.
No. I think we're I hesitate to say there's no one else like us, but I haven't come across another company that works the same way that we do. I mean, it's insanity, really. It's complete insanity. Yeah. You know, I'm doing 10 people's job for no money, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And what money she does get, she gives to me. Because I deserve it because I'm on stage all the time. No, it's absurd. It's absurd. But, if we listen to our audience, yeah, we might be kind of a special thing. A lot of people have come to our shows who don't live here. They've come from all over the country. And some of them used to go boating out at Roach Harbor when we were still playing the plays out there. And we'd have, people kind of, call at a certain point from Connecticut and Florida and places like that to find out when we're playing our shows. Maybe they saw one last year when they boated up and stuff. So we had a lot of people come and from other places who've been nicely impressed by what we're doing. I think they come.
I think on this island, we have a huge number now of quite sophisticated people who have made this their retirement center. Mm-hmm. And it's changed a lot of things for us. I wanted to be professional from the beginning, but we just didn't have the money. We were using our own money for the first 10 years until we ran out. And probably more than that, more like 15. Anyway, we have a pretty sophisticated audience now, and who indoor shows as well as outdoor. So the outdoor Shakespeare is the one that attracts absolutely everybody because it's outside and it's under the stars and they can bring a picnic, although we encourage them to picnic in the garden before the shows so that the show isn't interrupted by, opening bottles of champagne and things. I've always felt that theater should be available to everybody, and especially Shakespeare, because no Shakespeare was being done here at all, which is what made me decide to go that route. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always been a favorite of mine, but I hadn't planned on it being specifically Shakespeare until we got up here and realized nobody was doing it. And now we have the most wonderful following of young adults who have been watching us every year since they were 3 years old, and now they're at college and they come back with girlfriends. I mean, it's amazing, or boyfriends.
The thing that I think is unique is that, and maybe other, outdoor Shakespeare theaters are this way also, but you don't charge. There's no fees. There's no.
That's right.
So how does that work? And how do you?
Well, it just works by goodwill. We have what we call the gold buckets. And we just say, if you can afford it, would you please put something in the gold buckets on your way out?
And the gold buckets always have a quote that Helen selected.
From the play.
From the play, having to do with money. And there's always seems to be some good one in there. and people dump money in there. And then they send us money, too. We do have a fundraiser. And people have sent us money, and not just people who live here on the island. Sometimes we get money from kind of unexpectedly from somebody who lives in Colorado or something.
Who came and saw a show, we do, our fundraiser is just a letter. I just send out a letter once a year. I didn't send one. Well, I sent a letter out this year and said, I'm not sending you a request for money this year because we're not able to do anything.
So people send us money anyway.
But they do. I mean, I just got a check today for $250 from somebody. Mm-hmm. The thing is that there are a lot of rich people on this island, and they like the idea of helping those who aren't rich. Mm-hmm. And they love the whole idea of being part of something that allows everybody to come. And so they give us money. And they give us quite a lot of money these days. Mm-hmm. Took us a long time to get there. But it costs us a huge amount to put these shows on with professional actors. Mm-hmm. Because I have to deal with the union, the actors' union. So I have to pay union wages and follow all their directives. So it's a lot of paperwork. And it's a lot of money. It's much more money than anybody knows. I don't tell them how much money. It's been wonderful because we don't push it and we don't make people feel guilty and we don't make them put something in. It's not, pay as you can or anything. It's mm-hmm. just, and every time before every show, I get up and say, if you can't afford to put anything in the bucket, you're most welcome anyway. Mm-hmm. And we hope that at some time in the future, you might be able to support theater wherever you find it.
we have a star circle, and we've got about 35, 40 members in the mm-hmm. star. The star circle is made up of people who give us 1,000 or more every year. Wow. And that's quite apart from the other few hundred people who are also in our program who have given money. Mm-hmm. So a lot of money comes in.
So everybody's name who gives anything goes into the program,
right?
If it's identifiable. Yeah. But of course, yeah. some people just pop, you know, a dollar in the bucket, and so you don't know who it was. So
and somebody, some people pop $100 in that bucket.
Yes.
The same yeah. night. So
you have nothing that you can actually rely on. We do it on a wing and a prayer.
Because your expenses, I mean, you have to pay the actors, you have to get the costumes and the props, and what
and
else?
Build the set, which is always a big thing. Yeah. Well, I just always sort of think to myself, okay, here we go again. Let's hope somebody gives us some money.
Well, of all the shows we do, because the Shakespeare in the summer, and then in the past, we have done a spring and or fall modern play in the small space we use in town. But the biggest thing that makes us the most money is the Christmas stuff.
Yes.
Which is just all readings, you know, stuff mm-hmm. that Helen's found and put together.
It's readings and music.
Readings
so we do it with musicians. And it's really sweet. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of people with their families come, you know, it's a really nice way to go into the Christmas season. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do it this year. But it feels good to us, and it feels good to them. And it's a very gentle program, you know, with lots of laughter and lots of beautiful stuff.
And serious stuff.
Some sad stuff.
Kind of make them laugh, make them cry.
Yeah, yeah.
And go home.
And some really good musicians yeah. and nice singing voices. And I perform in that one too.
Yeah. So it gets people in the Christmas spirit. This last Christmas, we did two pieces. Helen had Omnium Gatherum, which is this collection of music and poetry and stories and stuff that we do. And so, you know, people seem to like that one too. So
yeah. So that's our sort of native audience. You know, that's the people who live here and who, you know, they may have visitors from out of town and bring them.
Oh, yeah.
But in the summer, the Shakespeare's, you get all kinds of tourists as well as locals. So they're all looking for something to do in the evening.
We've had people bicycle out here to see the play,
yeah.
the tourists, and only realize it's now 10:30 and it's
pitch black. And there's no lights.
They have no way to get home. And so we'll just put them up in the rehearsal barn,
yeah.
you know, pour them a gin and tonic and say, welcome and have a good night.
And sit them on the porch and chat with them.
Sure, yeah.
And we've had people who've locked their keys in their cars and we've put up tents for them in the field. And, it, you know, it's very informal and just kind of, it's been lovely
yeah.
for 20 years.
Yeah.
21 years.
And all that changed this spring.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's happening now with...
Well, you know, for one thing, you know, I'm 72. And it's like, how much longer can I... It takes so much energy and I do everything except act, you know.
You are. You're 72 in 2 weeks.
Yes.
I didn't know you were that old.
Shut up. So I think what's happened to me is the momentum has gone. Mm. You know, I've just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed to keep going. And now suddenly I'm just, God, do I have the energy to pick this up and do it again?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But the plan is, all being well, and God knows it hasn't been well lately, is to do a full season next year and then maybe call it quits.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not do another Shakespeare, because those are exhausting and expensive, huge to do. And I think it'll be a very sad day, and I think a lot of people on the island will be very sad about it. But, you know, all... I've got good things to come to an end eventually. So I'm just hoping that we can get a full season in, finishing with the Christmas show, and maybe even doing, because another thing we do sort of similarly to the Christmas because we often do a Valentine's show where with all readings and poetry about love, both funny and not, and with a musician. And that's not difficult for us to do because Dan and I do the performing together. We don't have to pay a bunch of other people, and it's very kind of intimate and fun. So we might be able to pull off one of those in a Christmas show, you know, for the next couple of years. But next year, I think, is going to be our final full year.
One thing Helen hasn't really talked about yet is the when we used to do the tour.
Oh, right.
And we would take the show. We would start on right after the magic rehearsal, like within days.
The magic rehearsal was a great preparation for this, by the way.
Right. We would take the whole company. We would start at Orcus and go to Doe Bay, and they had just a big flat stage, and there's nothing else there. So you just have to wing it.
You just have to make it up. You do a magic rehearsal on the stage.
Yeah. And then the next morning, we go and get something to eat, and then we head out to Deer Harbor, which is on the other side of the saddlebag of Orcus Island. And then we have to wait for all these little boats to come collect us and take us over to Waldron, which is completely off the grid. And there's nothing there at all. No services, no store, no nothing. Just
there's a post office.
There's a post office. And a bunch of crazy old hippies who've been there forever. And then we would do that show in a big playing field, you know, and sometimes lose power, lights and everything. But
they have solar power at the school. Yeah. So we do it at the back of the school.
Yeah.
And people change in the bushes and, you know, people miss entrances because they're, you know, too far away.
Yeah, it's insane.
It's insanity, but they're all used to it because they've done the magic rehearsal.
Yeah. When the more you see the Orcus one out of the way, then the others just become really cool. I mean, the Orcus one's great because it's your first performance in front of a live audience. And so that's a real rush, that one. So the next night, you know, is the Waldron at night. And then we do that. The people take us in all over the island and after usually a big party. And then the next day they have to take us in these little boats back over to Deer Harbor, where we drive back in and catch the ferry and go to Shaw, which is very, you know, Bill Gates's dad comes to see the shows and stuff. It's fair as those kinds of people. And, you know, we play the show basically on top of a septic field. And
that community center doesn't have any garden to speak of. It sort of has this very rough, grassy, L-shaped piece of land that abuts two roads and it's full of septic system stuff. And so that's where we play. That's all we've ever played, yeah. Except for the last time we were there when we played in their new ball field, which didn't have any power at all. And we tried to light it with battery lanterns as footlights.
Tiki torches.
Nobody could see.
No, I think I finally grabbed it. One of my last speeches, I grabbed a tiki torch and basically put it under my face. So you could actually see me. But, and then we go and do two nights on Lopez at the Vineyard.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
Brett and Maggie have been good friends of ours for many years.
Since the first time we performed there.
And so performing there was really, really cool. And they have a wine evening and two wine evenings. And we always just had a really great time there. But the last time we were there, when we finally, Helen decided, you know, our hosts were getting tired and, you know, we're getting tired.
We're all about the same age. All of our hosts on the islands are about our age.
So our last performance there of The Tempest, I actually stood outside with Helen, which I never do. I always go back to the dressing rooms with the other actors.
But the dressing rooms being the Vineyard. So everybody puts their costume on a big box of wine. Yeah.
And but I actually was bidding goodbye to all these people coming to see our shows for, you know, 20 years. And it was really sad. And a lot of those people were really saddened by the fact that we weren't going to be coming back there. So it's going to be a sad day when we don't do it anymore, I think, for a lot of people. You know, yeah. But
so have we covered all the bases?
Oh, I think most of them, my goodness, yes, and then some.
So we do tend to rattle on.
No, it's one of the things I love hearing you and I love listening.
Well, there you have it.
Yes, There it is. Past, present, and future of Ireland's stage left. Thank you, Helen and Dan. We look forward to future productions and wish you all the best. We're keeping the ghost light on.